Good morning and welcome to Meet the People on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, Sandpoint, Alaska. Today is Friday, November 7th, 2008. I'm Kels Hetherington and Dave Dittman is my guest. Dave is a leading political pollster and pollster in general in Alaska. His political polls can be found all over. Dave leads the Dittman Research Company in Anchorage. Dave, thanks for joining us on the show today.
You're sure welcome. It's nice to talk with you.
First, how does one and how did you become a political pollster?
Well, I don't know about others, but for me it was just something I was interested in doing. This goes back a long ways. We've been doing it for 40 years. In fact, it even goes back to when I graduated from high school nearly over 50 years ago. Hmm. And that was in 1960, and just about that time is when polling was beginning to emerge as something that was talked about openly. Before then, it was quite secretive. It was considered to be, you know, manipulative or something that you normally didn't do. You didn't ever hear anything about, or very little about polling. As far as candidates and campaigns using it, the media would use it. There'd be published polls, but candidates didn't use it. And that was a year, 1960, when John F. Kennedy and Hubert Humphrey were fighting for the Democratic nomination for president, and the polls were a major feature, I think, in who was going to win that. And that was about the time I was trying to decide what I was going to do with my life.
Hmm. Does Dittman Research typically work for the Republican campaign or the Democratic campaign, or are you an independent company and you work for some nonpartisan organization?
Well, we work for who hires us, basically, and that tends to be mostly Republican. And that doesn't bother me. I'm more conservative by my nature. And I think you work better, you do a better job, you can just kind of commit your heart and soul to something that that you agree with. We have worked with Democrats, and there are some conservative Democrats that I'm proud to call friends and pleased to work with, but it's just hard for me to really get enthusiastic about working for people of a liberal persuasion.
Mm. The main reason I wanted to have you on the program this morning is because you're a well-known pollster in Alaska, and the polls were so wrong about the re-election bid that Ted Stevens seems to have successfully made just a few days ago. Why were the polls so wrong in Alaska?
Well, this time it was very different. This is the first time in 38 years since we started that the polls, that our polls were wrong. And so I looked into it, exactly like you're saying, what was different this time? What should I have foreseen? And what had happened this time, it was forecast beforehand that this would be a large turnout, a big turnout. It was anticipated there'd be a large number of new voters, voters that were going to support Obama, voters that wanted change. And there were talks and examples of long, long lines and people needing to bring a book. It's going to be waiting for 2 hours or so. And so everybody was forecasting a major turnout this time. And it turned out to be the second lowest voter turnout in Alaska's history. And most of the people, I think, that didn't vote, that were supposed to vote and were anticipated voting, actually there's 16,000 fewer voters this year than 4 years ago. And I think most of what happened is those people that didn't vote, that 16,000 that stayed home, would have voted for Begich and Berkowitz, but they had decided that their vote wasn't needed. The polls had Begich and Berkowitz ahead, and they didn't want to wait in the long lines, and it was cold outside, and I think they just stayed home because their vote wasn't needed.
Mm. Yeah, there wasn't the get-out-the-vote push among Democratic circles in Alaska that there was in other places in the United States. And I think that negatively impacted the Democrats, just as you are describing, Mr. Dittman. Now, you also mentioned that turnout in Alaska was lower by 16,000 voters. That accounts for about 4% of the Alaskan electorate. Or I guess it's 4% lower than it was the previous time we had a presidential election in 2004. Why would that have been at a time when you had the governor on the top of the ticket? I don't understand that. Does that mean that people are less enthusiastic about Sarah Palin? We thought Republicans would come out in droves to support a very popular Republican governor in Alaska.
Well, they did. That's why you see Senator Stevens and Congressman Young ahead. Congressman Young is ahead by roughly 17,000 votes. Senator Stevens, it's a lot closer. It's about 3,500. So you're right about that. The Republicans did turn out in their usual numbers, maybe even a slightly more. So Republican candidates did well. In fact, a lot better than the polls forecast. And I think it's for the reason you just mentioned. They turned out to support the governor, and they supported Senator Stevens and Congressman Young as well. Democrats, on the other hand, didn't turn out as far as their usual numbers. There was, again, 16,000 fewer voters than just 4 years ago, and I think they were largely people that would have voted Democrat. That they weren't all Democrats by registration necessarily, but they were people that probably would have voted for Democrats, and that accounts for the difference between what was forecast for the Democrat candidates and what actually happened.
The Senate race in Alaska has yet to be called, and there are more than 40,000 absentee ballots still outstanding. So it still could go to the Democrat in the race. But Senator Stevens' campaign is saying it's more than likely that the absentee ballots will be for the Republican. Would you agree with that logic?
Not necessarily. In the past, going 4 years ago, when Senator Murkowski and Tony Knowles were locked in what was thought to be a fairly close race. It really wasn't that close. Lisa was 10,000 votes ahead, a little over 10,000 votes ahead at the conclusion of voting on Tuesday, the November 2nd. And by the time they counted all the absentees and challenge ballots and early voting, everything, she had lost 760 votes to Noel. So she ended up with over 9,000 votes. But she lost, during the counting of the challenged and the absentee ballots, she lost votes, but in this case it was 760. If Stevens loses the same amount, he'd still win by 2,000 or so.
There may be more absentee ballots this time, and as you mentioned, there are some challenge ballots as well.
Yeah, the challenged or question ballots, and usually they're questioned for a pretty good reason, and they're not counted 100% by any means. And the reason the question ballots, of course, are people that are voting outside of their district or they don't have a home address. And those are people that are more likely to not be registered to vote at all or more transient in nature. And so the question ballots are, again, questioned for a pretty good reason, and they're not counted as much as a non-question vote. So you downplay those a little bit. Early voting, those are votes in the can. They won't change. They know what's in there. And there's a way to look and see what the early votes that have been counted did. So if you take the early votes that are still outstanding and apportion them the same as the early votes that have been counted, they broke about 60-40 for Begich. So if you take the question ballots and down and reduce them, factor them down just a little bit because some of them won't be counted. If you get the early votes and factor them just the 60-40 split that went for Begich among the early votes that have been counted, and then if you say that the absentees split even, then you end up with still a close election, but Senator Stevens still wins. But the one thing that's different this time is that, not just this time, it's happening, it's emerging this in this direction, is the absentee votes used to mean what it says, that people are going to be absent. They were they were traveling, or for some reason they weren't going to be home and they'd vote early. Absentee voting is becoming more and more a way to vote early. And you're merging the absentee votes and early votes. So to the extent, a lot of the absentee votes, I think, can be counted as early votes. And those early votes favored Begich. So, I'm looking right now. In fact, we could talk later today when I finish the analysis we're working on, but we're apportioning some of the absentee votes as early votes, which is what I think a lot of them are now. And so Begich may do better among that pool that's still out than normally was thought. But I think the main thing is that looking at the past, the combination of absentee questions and early voting does tend to favor the Democrat candidate. So Begich, I think, is in, he has good reason to be optimistic. But I certainly wouldn't say Senator Stevens is going to automatically lose 3,500 votes. I don't think that's true either. I really don't know for sure right now, and I'm trying to figure it out to get a little bit closer. But it would be it'll be a hard one to really anticipate accurately, I think.
Mm. Sounds interesting, and I'd very much like to see that analysis. We're going to take a quick break here. I'm talking on Meet the People with Dave Dittman of the Dittman Research Company in Anchorage. They do a lot of polling, much of it political. If you're listening in the car and you're going to be heading home or to the office, you can catch us online now at apradio.com. That's www.apradio.com. That takes you to our website, and you can find out right there how to start streaming us on your home computer or office computer. We'll be back on Meet the People in just a minute.
Alaska, continuing a tradition of innovation and excellence, connecting businesses across Alaska through an advanced statewide data network, from office to office, town to town, to the world outside. At TelAlaska, of course you can.
Is your TV ready for digital? I'm Commissioner Mike Copps of the Federal Communications Commission. By February 17th, full-power TV stations will stop broadcasting in analog and broadcast in digital only. Your TV needs to be ready for digital so you can keep watching. If you have a TV with a digital tuner, you're okay. If your TV is connected to a paid service like cable or satellite, digital broadcasting generally should have no effect. If you have any questions, you can call your provider. But if you have an analog TV with rabbit ears or rooftop antenna, you need to act. You can buy a TV with a digital tuner, subscribe to a paid service, or buy a converter box that plugs into your analog TV. The government offers up to two $40 coupons towards the cost of eligible converter boxes. If your TV is ready for digital now, you can get the benefits of digital broadcasting today. But don't delay or...
February 17th, 2009. Is your TV ready for digital? Visit DTV.gov or dial 1-888-CALL-FCC. This message brought to you by the FCC.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Shumagin Corporation. Located in Sandpoint, the Shumagin family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sandpoint Tavern, and the Anchor Inn Motel. The Shumagin Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sandpoint, on the web at www.shumagin.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Shumagin Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Now on Meet the People, my guest this morning is Dave Dittman of Dittman Research Company in Anchorage, Alaska. We've been talking a bit about the Stevens race, which is one of, I think, four U.S. Senate races in the nation still yet to be called. And this one looks like it could be close, but we think that Ted Stevens will probably be the successful candidate in the race and reelected to the U.S. Senate for a seventh term. If he is reelected and then there is another U.S. Senate race, either because he resigns because of the felony convictions, which he will try to appeal but may not be able to overturn, and it ends up as a special election in this Senate race, Mr. Dittman, would Palin be able, if she's the candidate, to beat Begich?
I don't know. I really don't know. We haven't pulled those that combination, and it's... It's a good question. I think she's still very popular. We did a survey, in fact, that was just finished in the beginning of the last week of the election, and she was 67% favorable, 30% unfavorable. So it's still well over 2-1 favorable, which is you know really good. But my personal feeling right now is that they might think they'd like her to stay home and be governor for a while. That she's had the run at the national level, and there just might be a feeling that she needs to finish out this term and maybe even serve another term. So the answer is, truthfully, I don't know, but I could see how there'd be conflicting opinions on both sides.
Mm. Now, you spoke a bit about her popularity currently in the state of Alaska. Do you believe that the presidential campaign that she was a part of for 68 days was a plus or minus for Sarah Palin?
In Alaska, probably a minus. I know that, again, the favorable ratings that we had been measuring for almost 2 years, had ranged, had been as high as 88%, which is almost unbelievable, 9 out of 10 support. When you're in a, like a governor making decisions that inevitably have to make somebody mad, you know, to have support ratings that high. So they just, it was inevitable, in my opinion, that it had to come down. But I think if it's going to, you know, relatively, you know, come down, but still, I think most politicians would love to have 2-to-1 favorable ratings or over that. So I think the, I think answering your question, the net effect was down, but it certainly wasn't fatal or it didn't, you know, it still left it at a, I think at a very satisfactory rating that most politicians would love to have.
Are there some negative impact situations that are cured simply by time passing, as opposed to ones like convictions? I don't know, what kind of things are cured with time, and what kinds of things tend to be sort of the axe falling on the political career? Can you separate those two?
Well, I think so, but just on the basis of there's a lot of things to be done in Alaska. She's only been governor for 2 years, and primarily has been working on the gas line. I think now the gas line is still, you know, heavily in play. We have two competing proponents or applicants. I think that they're going to try to work them together. I know FERC wants them to combine simply because FERC doesn't have the manpower to evaluate two proposals. They'd like to just look at one. And I think the governor may be trying to you know, work to get, make that happen. But I think she will be able to begin to work on other things now. And the other type of things may be beginning to be in the social area, the sanctity of marriage, or you know, some of those other issues. They tend to be more divisive. So I think, you know, the broad-based support in Alaska for a gas line made that, you know, basically a no-lose issue. I think now as they begin working on some of these other more contentious issues, that my guess is that you may have find the electorate becoming more split.
A lot of people are saying that Stevens seems to have won this election because the polls show that, or the vote count has said that so far, and it looks like he is going to pull it out and be reelected for yet a seventh term. Were people in Alaska voting to reelect Senator Stevens, or were they voting so that they could have another election by reelecting Stevens, hoping that another Republican would emerge who could actually serve a term in the U.S. Senate?
I don't think that latter option was a major factor. It may have been for a few people, but it's pretty hard to follow that.
I understand, yeah.
And it's pretty obtuse. My guess is that you know, the people that were voting for him knew what they were doing and were voting for him. And there's a lot of, you know, the factual matter is, in looking at the poll results on a tracking basis, it was closing at the end. In fact, on the last poll that we had that was finished over the weekend, the final ballots that were samples that were taken on Sunday night actually had him ahead. So, but that didn't mean on election day he'd be ahead, because you still had to go back in time and factor in the absentee and the early voting ballots that were cast when Begich was further ahead. So even though we had Stevens closing and almost catching Begich over the weekend, you couldn't assume it's going to end up that way. So I still think that the absentee ballots and the ballots are still outstanding could favor Begich, but I think people knew what they were doing, and what was happening at the end that was causing it to close is people began to be more and more aware of that maybe this conviction was not deserved. It became public at the end that one of the jurors excused himself to take off, you know, to go watch a horse race, and it began to be more and more feeling of sympathy for the man that was you know, potentially greatly maligned, and maybe this so-called verdict wasn't warranted. And so I think people were clearly by the end of the election voting for Senator Stevens. And they knew what they were doing. And I think to a large degree, the Democrats or the people that didn't vote were largely Democrats, and they didn't know what they were doing. They thought that their person would, you know, their candidate would probably still win and didn't need their vote, so they didn't show up.
Interesting analysis of the entire situation. Some people say, and you mentioned the beginning, are almost like the propaganda. And the Democrats certainly use the polls to push Mayor Begich's candidacy for U.S. Senate. Research 2000, which appears to be a very Democratic-oriented poll, said that they expected that he would win by 22%. And that didn't happen. In fact, so far, Stevens is leading in the count by 1.5%. Do you think the Democrats... Well, first of all, is it your opinion that polls actually sway voters?
Sometimes they do. This time they did. I think they didn't sway them in terms of who they voted for, but I think it certainly did affect whether they voted at all. In this case, I think, the 16,000 fewer voters this time than 4 years ago were people that mostly would have voted for Democrats, but didn't think their vote was needed.
Mm.
And when you couple that with the forecasts of long lines, Anchorage, I don't know about Sandpoint and King Salmon and the King Cove and the areas out there, Naknek and Dillingham. I don't have any idea what the publicity was like out there, but in the urban areas, they're forecasting 2 or 3 hours in line, and the Daily News, the headline on the editorial page was "Bring a book."
Hmm.
You're going to be here for a while, and Channel 2 and the news media spent a lot of time in nearly every newscast. They had footage of people standing in line, and they'd interview people and standing in line, and they'd talk about it's cold, but it's worth it. It's important to vote, and I think by far that influenced people. Especially people that were going to vote for Begich and Berkowitz, they thought, well, why do I want to stand in line? It's cold out there. If someone's telling me it's going to take me a couple hours, I better bring a book, and my guy's already going to win. So I think the combination of the polls didn't sway voters as much as who they voted for, but I think it sure did determine whether they voted at all.
A final question for you, Mr. Bittman. If Stevens wins and is then forced out of the U.S. Senate, who would be the, and if Sarah Palin is not going to run for U.S. Senate, who would be the next most plausible Republican to make that race?
Right now, I'd say John Binkley. John is would be a very formidable candidate, in my opinion. And I really don't know, who else would rival him. There are not a lot of names, but at least some names come to the top. Some people are mentioning Sean,
Parnell, you're thinking Lieutenant
Parnell,
Governor?
Parnell. Yeah. But he was such a lackluster candidate for House. I can't see him getting a lot of support. He just didn't seem to have the fire or the commitment. Other people have said that Lauren Lehman would be a candidate, but I think he's been out for a while, and I don't know if he could raise any money. I just don't know if that would work. And other people have said, John Coghill, and they're just names come up that. Just, I'm not saying that these are even viable, but just some of the names that I've heard. But I think when it comes all back to it, I would say, John Binkley is by far probably the most likely candidate, if he wants to do it. I certainly haven't talked to him, even heard he has any interest.
Yeah, who knows? He does seem to be getting involved, from what I hear, in the Republican organization and making it clear that he would like to be considered for the nomination in a straw poll, should that happen. Any chance you think Governor Palin might put him into the U.S. Senate for a temporary period until an election could be called?
Put John in?
Yeah, nominate or appoint Binkley to the U.S. Senate in an interim period?
Uh-huh. I do think I can't think of a good reason why she wouldn't. I don't think there's, as far as I know, there certainly isn't any animosity or a reason that she wouldn't. I don't think there's been some speculation whether she would appoint herself, and I sure don't think she would do that. That would not go over well at all. After the outrage of Senator Murkowski appointing his daughter, I think if Governor Palin appointed herself, that'd be one of the worst things she could ever do.
I think that would be political suicide. I agree.
And it's not related to her favorability, but people. Elect her to be governor and expect her to be governor, and I think it would just be overkill, and it just wouldn't work.
And Alaskans are set on having an election. They changed the law after Lisa Murkowski was appointed by her father, as you mentioned.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Dittman of Dittman Research in Anchorage, for joining me on the phone today for Meet the People on 8:30 a.m. KSDP.
You bet. I'm just happy to talk with you, and if you care to, give me a call in a couple of hours, and I'll give you what I think might happen with these absentees and challenge ballots that are still out.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and I will give you a call. Talk to you later.
Okay, thanks a lot.
That's Dave Dittman, a well-known pollster in Alaska, and he was talking to me about the Ted Stevens Mark Begich race, which is still up in the air, but it looks like the senator has been reelected. We're still waiting for that to be called. A few community announcements before we go back to the Science Friday program, which we will join. It's already started. There'll be a luncheon bake sale Saturday, November the 8th, that from 12 to 2 p.m. That'll be at the City Gym in Sandpoint. What will be available there will be fish pies, salmon patties, octopus burgers, crab salads, clam chowder, fresh bread, mossberry pies, doughboys, marinated octopus salads, cakes and pies and cookies. Sounds good. And all proceeds will go towards paying for Linda Chebanoy's cancer treatment in Seattle. So this is a very important community event that'll be Saturday, November the 8th, 12 to 2 p.m. And again, that'll support Linda Chebanoy's cancer treatment in Seattle. So please do your best to be there. Also, the clinic this afternoon is giving away free shots to protect against the flu. And you can go there between 10 to 1, so that time period is almost over. But until 1 o'clock, if you go to the Sandpoint Clinic, you can get a free flu shot. And also, if you have not already figured this out, you can listen to this program and any other 8:30 a.m. KSD programs online by going to our website. That's www.apradio.org. And it'll show you right there how to listen online to our on-air broadcast. That's it for this week and for today. I'll be back on Monday. If it's 11 o'clock, it's Meet the People on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, Sandpoint, and King Cove.